Hello, this is Karen Fresco with the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, February 6, 2019. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Urbana School Board, There Will Be Consequences. Interim Superintendent Discusses Fights, Apologizes Over Lack of Communication Amid Crisis, by Lindsay Jones, Urbana. At an Urbana School Board meeting Tuesday night, Interim Superintendent Preston Williams delivered both a public apology and a strong pledge to do better, addressing concerns about fights Monday at Urbana High School that led to the arrest of 7 students and the short hospitalization of 1 teacher. Public comments at the meeting ranged from calls for a full-time police presence in the school to pleas that some students involved not be expelled so they can continue their education. Multiple parents wondered why they weren't notified about the building lockdown until well after it was underway, or why they hadn't been notified of an early dismissal until shortly before the entire building was dismissed. A one-line email sent to parents Monday didn't mention the lockdown. "It was a failure on our part to do what we exist to do," Williams said of that communication. "That did not happen. It is our responsibility to fix that." Williams pledged that the district would do better, and that was why he came back to the district on December 5, leaving his retirement. "My responsibility that I took on December 5 was to make sure our schools are safe, our schools are learning environments, and that our parents understand we care," he said. "That was my duty. That was what I decided to do. I can assure you we will continue to work to make this situation better. I cannot sit here and tell you we are going to make everything perfect. This is a very complex, challenging problem." He added that some of the students involved will face the board for a hearing that will help officials determine what action to take. "We do not throw away our kids," he said. "Their success might not be in our high school, but that still doesn't mean we are throwing them away. That has never been the case." However, he said, action of some form will be taken regarding the students. "When you do things that are that heinous, there will be consequences. When you do things like that, there are consequences for your actions." School Board President John Dimmitt said the number of students involved Monday ranged from 10 to 20. "That means 1,180 or 1,190 did the right thing," he said. "We should be congratulating our students for being some of the best around." In 35 years of education, Williams said he hadn't seen anything like Monday's incident. "But that students came back Tuesday was its own form of inspiration," he said. "I saw students showing up after a traumatic situation that they had no part in, but they showed up anyway and they went to school," he said. "After 35 years in education, that was one of the highlights." Champaign City Council, Unit 4, Asked to Shed More Light on Central Expansion, by Adalberto Toledo, Champaign. City Council members urged Champaign School District officials Tuesday night to listen closely to residents' concerns about lighting at Central High School's future athletic fields, as well as other expansion-related issues. Proposed 60 to 90-foot lights for the soccer and softball fields, which will be built on the former site of the McKinley Family YMCA, have area residents concerned about sky glow effects, light spills, and glare issues. And some central neighbors said they don't want towering light poles in the middle of what is a single-family residential area. But Elizabeth Stegmeyer, the district's director of capital projects and planning, pointed out that the tall poles may make it easier to reduce light spills, because the taller the lights are, the easier it is to focus their glow. She said comparable lights can be found at Spalding Field and Urbana High School, both of which don't have a light spill problem, according to Champaign Planning and Development Director Bruce Knight. Stegmaier also reminded council members and the public that design and planning for those fields is still quite a ways away. "We are not fully in the design state on these fields," Stegmaier said. "The renovation of Central is heading to bid first, and we don't anticipate construction in the North Fields until 2022. So we won't begin in earnest on the details until 2021. Still, residents had many more concerns about the expansion of Central, such as event parking for the athletic fields, which some council members fear will spill into adjacent streets. Other worries include noise buffering, bicycle infrastructure, and trees, all problems council member Alicia Beck addressed in her comments Tuesday. Although the city is allowing for the high school expansion to not have as many trees as would normally be required, Beck said she hopes there can be other ways to protect neighborhood residents from school-generated noise. As for biking, Beck wants the council to stop granting waivers that allow developers to not have covered parking, as is the case with Central. She said the requirements are in place for a reason. "We're being asked to consider a waiver for the covering of the bike area," Beck said. "I think it's a really short-sighted request, and we need to start thinking about our bicycle infrastructure. If we're trying to increase bicycling in our community and trying to increase that mode of transport, then having all the necessary pieces for safe and comfortable riding is necessary. That includes covered parking." Following comments from council members and the public, council member Vanna Pianfetti said she's noticed a repeated disconnect in communication between the district and neighbors. "It seems to be a recurring theme," Pianfetti said. "I hope that we do our due diligence with the community and offer them the opportunity to see what's going on. And we ask the community to participate. We need to make sure everyone is heard in this process." Council member Tom Bruno said lighting issues, the vacating of portions of streets, construction, noise, and parking are just some of the growing pains associated with the Unit 4 referendum's goal to keep Central Central. "We all have some concerns about how this development will integrate into our community," Bruno said. "I'm optimistic that solutions will be reached with lighting that will achieve the combined goals of the immediate neighbors and Unit 4. When the community spoke and said they wanted to keep the high school downtown, we knew it would be causing us some pains and that it's not an easy process. But I'm mindful of the fact that the folks in charge are doing their best." University of Illinois. His legacy endures. First Black chemistry PhD, devoted much of life to education. By Julie Worth, Urbana. Back in the early 1900s, a young Tuskegee scholar by the name of St. Elmo Brady had two big-name mentors, acclaimed scientist George Washington Carver and noted educator Booker T. Washington. The Louisville, Kentucky native later became the first Black person in the country to earn a PhD in chemistry at the University of Illinois in 1916, and went on to substantially advance chemistry education at four historically Black universities as a professor, researcher, and mentor. His legacy was honored Tuesday at the U of I's Noyes Lab with a National Historic Chemical Landmark designation from the American Chemical Society. Brady received his Ph.D. at a time when very few people reached that level, said Jonathan Swedler, director of the U of I School of Chemical Sciences. He was just the 40th person overall to earn a Ph.D. from Illinois. If that was his only accomplishment, it would be notable. What he really did was take that degree and that expertise and basically moved education in chemistry at a number of locations forward. That multiplied his impact, Swedler said. Peter Darhout, a U of I chemistry alumnus and immediate past president of the society, said the landmark plaque recognizes the outstanding accomplishments and leadership impact that Dr. Brady has had on the chemical profession, opening up chemistry education to generations of black students. He said the profession should continue those efforts, as we're not where we want to be just yet. Born in 1884 and named for the main character in a popular novel of the time, Brady received a bachelor degree in 1908 from Fisk University, a historically black college in Nashville. He then taught for 4 years at Tuskegee Normal and Industrial Institute in Alabama, now Tuskegee University. It was there that he became friends with Booker T. Washington, who had founded Tuskegee, and George Washington Carver, an inventor known for developing products using peanuts. It was the friendship of these two men that showed me the real value of giving oneself and effort to help the other fellow, Brady wrote. In 1912, the U of I offered Brady a scholarship to graduate school, and he earned his master's degree in 1914. Brady continued his studies under chemistry professor Clarence Derrick, earning a Ph.D. in 1916. During his time at Illinois, Brady became the first African-American admitted to Pi Lambda Upsilon, the Chemistry Honor Society, and was one of the first inducted into Sigma Chi, the Science Honorary Society. He also published several papers in national journals. Many years later, he told his students that when he went to graduate school, they began with 20 whites and one other, and ended in 1916 with 6 whites and one other. He relished studying with great minds at Illinois. Brady opted against a career in industry and returned to Tuskegee to teach for 4 years. He moved to Howard University in 1920 to chair its chemistry department, creating the first graduate program in chemistry at a historically black college or university. In 1927, he returned to his alma mater and transformed Fisk's chemistry department, assembling an outstanding faculty, launching a summer program with the U of I, creating a lecture series, teaching, and continuing his own research and raising money for its first modern chemistry building. He retired in 1952, but was soon recruited to build the chemistry department at Tougaloo College in Jackson, Mississippi. He died in 1966 at age 82. Over his career, he basically gave back to society and made it better, Swedler said. Each of those campuses will host a celebration of Brady's achievements and mount an American Chemical Society plaque in his honor during Black History Month. The U of I also brought in undergraduates from those four institutions to present their research during Tuesday's day-long event. Several of Brady's relatives were also on hand for the ceremony, including his granddaughter, Carol Brady von Viel of Savannah, Georgia, and great-grandson William Clay von Viel, who were thrilled that the university was honoring him. "My grandfather, first and foremost, was an educator," said Carol von Viel, who graduated from Fisk with a degree in history. "This allows his efforts to go forward, and I'm so glad." "He was every child's dream of a grandfather," she added, teaching her to play checkers, making sock puppets, and taking her out for ice cream. Sweetler said U of I officials knew Brady was the first Black person to earn a chemistry PhD at Illinois, but had to do additional research to find out whether he was the first in the country. Vera Mintz, former director of the U of I's Nuclear Magnetic Resonance Lab, who had served on the American Chemical Society's Landmarks Committee, reached out to other colleges and universities that were operating 100 years ago to make sure no one preceded him, Sweetler said. Jamitris Rimkus, a reference archivist at the U of I Archives, dug up information about Brady's career, including letters of appreciation written by his former students when he retired from Fisk, detailing how he advised and mentored them. At every institution where he was a faculty member, he helped build, or sometimes built from scratch, chemistry programs, she said. He raised money to build buildings so these schools would have modern laboratories. Rimkus, who earned 2 degrees at the U of I, said it's important to learn about early students at the university, particularly from underrepresented groups. "Being African American myself, I find that learning about early Black students is a reminder to me that it can be done, that completing your degree is possible, and that you deserve, that everybody deserves an education. And you belong here," she said. "We've always belonged here. We've always been a part of the student body at the University of Illinois." There are only a handful of other chemistry landmarks in Illinois, including one honoring Noyes Lab for the generations of renowned chemists and Nobel laureates who studied there. Students Face Judge After Urbana High Brawls, by Mary Schenck, Urbana. A conflict that started Friday between two rival groups of boys at Urbana High School bled over into Monday and sparked several fights that caused administrators to lock down the school and dismiss early, the county's top prosecutor told a judge Tuesday. State Attorney Julia Reitz asked Judge Heidi Ladd to keep 6 freshmen and sophomore boys who were arrested Monday locked up until they can be tried on a charge of mob action in juvenile court. Another 2 youths were arrested Tuesday and expected to be in court today. Ladd agreed to the continued detention, with an exception for 1 teen who was put on home confinement because of medical issues that require him to go to a doctor in Peoria. That youth may leave his home only for school or doctor's appointments. He may not continue practicing the sports he is involved in, the judge said. The judge called what happened Monday at UHS a dangerous, out-of-control situation and said it was a matter of immediate and urgent necessity that the boys remain in the juvenile detention center until hearings set for February 13 and 14. Police reported that all was quiet at the school Tuesday. Additional officers were on hand to make sure of that, in the wake of the chaos that started late Monday morning. Late Tuesday afternoon, police arrested 2 more boys in connection with the Monday melees and took them to the juvenile detention center. Parents and custodians for 5 of the 6 boys who appeared Tuesday asked for and were granted court-appointed attorneys to represent their boys on the Class 4 felony charge. Only one family had hired their own attorney Tuesday. Although 7 students were arrested Monday, Reed said one of those was a girl who was trying to get to her backpack while a fight was going on and was not intentionally involved in an altercation. She was not charged. Also charged with misdemeanor resisting a peace officer was the mother of one of the boys who was arrested. Urbana Police Lieutenant Rich Searles said Adrian Pettis, 35, of Urbana, was arrested when she allegedly refused to comply with police directions. She is free on bond and due back in court April 10. Reitz filed a single count of mob action against the boys, some of whom have had prior police contacts, alleging that by use of force and violence, they disturbed the public peace by fighting at the high school. Reitz told Ladd that Urbana police officers continue to investigate what happened, but was able to lay out some preliminary findings for the judge. Police from several agencies were called to the school about 11:40 a.m. and learned from staff that there had been multiple fights at different places in the building that caused the school to lock down due to the volatile environment, Reed said. A police review of school surveillance video and cell phone video taken by students, which is continuing, revealed that the main conflict stemmed from an ongoing feud between one group that calls itself On My Brother, or OMB, and another nameless group. On Monday morning, Reed said, 7 members of the On My Brother group appeared to face off with 3 members of the unnamed group in the hall outside the cafeteria. Reed said video showed that one of the unnamed group raised a fist, and then the fight is on, both in the hallway and in the cafeteria. An associate principal and a teacher tried to intervene. Another teacher, Germasimula Kokosis, grabbed the arm of one of the boys to break up the brawl and got knocked to the floor, where another team involved in the fight fell on top of her. She hit her head on a locker and on the floor lost consciousness. There was no indication that any of the boys had intentionally struck her. I don't think anyone knew she was there, Reed said. She was treated at the area hospital and released later. Reitz asked that all the boys be held, while Assistant Public Defender Abby Kauser asked that they be released to their parents or guardians. One of the 6 is currently on court supervision for a battery case. None of the others had juvenile adjudications, but 3 of them have had prior police contacts and had been referred to the Youth Assessment Center for services at least 3 times but never followed through. Urbana Police Sergeant Matt Bain said school officials indicated to police that the 6 boys have been suspended from school. Champaign County Board, officials get first-hand look inside jails, by Tim Mitchell, Urbana. Champaign County's new sheriff and new county board leadership have begun the process of addressing the needs of an aging jail built in 1980 and a second jail built in 1996 that is bursting at the seams to meet modern needs. On Tuesday, Sheriff Dustin Hoyerman and his staff led the board's facilities committee on a tour of the downtown jail and satellite jail. The visit was billed as the first step in helping the county respond to ongoing needs at the 2 facilities. Off and on, the possible closure of the older downtown site and the renovation and expansion of the other site have been discussed. This has been an ongoing issue for about 10 years, said Board Chair Geraldo Rosales. We have had multiple contractors looking at the two buildings. According to Rosales, it will cost $7 million to demolish the downtown building and $20 million to remodel, upgrade, and expand the satellite jail. The rub, according to Rosales, is raising the money to do the work. It is a money issue, he said. Jail staff first led the board members on a tour of the satellite site, including booking, the holding area, video court, visitation room, the B pod, the A pod, kitchen, laundry, medical unit, mental health office, and control room. Then the committee toured the downtown site's visitation area, living units, classroom, library, and indoor recreation area. Jail staff said the rise of gun violence, gangs, and people with mental health issues have created modern challenges perhaps not anticipated when the satellite facility was built. By statute, we are in charge of providing a safe, healthy, and clean facility for all the people who come here, Hoyerman said. It is difficult to expand our offerings given the time and space restraints that we have. The satellite jail wasn't designed to take care of today's needs, said County Board Member John Rector. There is inadequate space for mental health and re-entry, said County Board Member Pranjal Vachaspati. From the area updates, autism research, Spark study recruiting kids, families, Urbana. Thousands of children with autism and their families are being recruited for a massive landmark study exploring links between genetics and autism. Local families can become a part of the so-called Spark study at a DNA saliva collection and registration event hosted by Rush University. It will be held from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday at the Place for Children with Autism at Lincoln Square, 301 South Vine Street, Urbana, Unit 10. Eligible to participate in SPARC or Simons Foundation Powering Autism Research for Knowledge are kids and adults of any age with a diagnosis of autism, along with their parents and siblings. We'll take a break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette dated Wednesday, February 6, 2019. Please stay tuned.